This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein appoints a special counsel to oversee the federal investigation into Russia's alleged interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election and to explore potential collusion between the Trump campaign and Moscow. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. The announcement of Robert Mueller as special counsel comes in the wake of a series of events which have rocked Washington in recent days. On May 9, President Donald Trump fired FBI Director James Comey. President Trump's initial justification for sacking Comey was his handling of the investigation of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's private email server. However, Mr. Trump later admitted it had more to do with the FBI's ongoing investigation into Russia's interference in the U.S. presidential campaign. Then, media reports confirmed that President Trump, in February, asked FBI Director Comey to shut down the federal investigation into Mr. Trump's former National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn. This, according to a memo that Mr. Comey allegedly wrote shortly after the meeting. Lawmakers are attempting to corroborate the account by requesting a copy of the memo and a public briefing with Mr. Comey. While a president can dismiss an FBI director, analysts say doing so in an alleged attempt to quash an active investigation could be seen as an obstruction of justice. Yet another controversy erupted over disclosure of classified information to two high-level Russian diplomats. Several U.S. newspapers reported that Mr. Trump disclosed highly classified intelligence to Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, who were visiting the Oval Office on May 10. That high-profile visit in and of itself was controversial, since Russian photographers who work for the state-run TASS agency, a propaganda arm of the Kremlin, were permitted access while the U.S. press was blocked. President Donald Trump has denied telling former FBI Director James Comey to shut down the investigation involving his former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. He also defended his, quote, absolute right to share classified information with Russian officials, even though national security experts expressed deep concern about the wisdom of doing so, especially with a foreign adversary like Moscow. Regarding the appointment of Robert Mueller as special counsel, Mr. Trump called it, quote, the single greatest witch hunt of a politician in American history, unquote. However, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have welcomed the appointment of Mr. Mueller, a former FBI director who has worked under both Democratic and Republican administrations. Mueller assumes his new role as the FBI and the intelligence committees in both the Senate and the House of Representatives are already probing Russia's interference in the 2016 election. To the dismay of the Republican-controlled Congress, these investigations are overshadowing, if not hampering, their legislative agenda. With us to discuss the tumultuous U.S. political landscape are two distinguished analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and that's a centrist policy group based here in Washington. And Ken Goode, he's senior fellow with the National Security Team at the Center for American Progress, and that's a liberal think tank here in Washington. This program was recorded prior to the appointment of Mr. Robert Mueller as special counsel. Well, John Fortier, there's so much to discuss. So your reaction basically to all of what is going on, the firing of James Comey, the FBI director, then revelations that via memo Mr. Comey wrote to the file, so to speak, he was asked by Mr. Trump to shut down the investigation into Trump's former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Some see this as a potential obstruction of justice. I mean, there's so much going on. How do you react to all of this, the timing and the revelations?
Well, I think you could say that Donald Trump obviously came in as a somewhat controversial president to begin with. With all the ups and downs of the first 3 months, 100 days, there was some case to be made that his base was still with him and people who were against him were against him. The latest developments threaten that. I think it does threaten to open a crack in some Republican, certainly legislators in Congress, as well as potentially the Republican base. It's new enough, we don't know, but there's a lot out there. And so I think it's clear that the president and the administration are going to have to open up more and have some more scrutiny on what happened with the firing of James Comey, what happened with the meeting with James Comey and President Trump, whether there was talk of stopping the investigation. So I do think some of that's going to come. Will it be a special prosecutor? Will it be a special investigation? Will it go further beyond? I think there's some appetite in Congress on the Republican side for at least knowing more, hearing more. Whether we get to the point of the more serious investigations, we'll just have to see. It's relatively new.
Turning to you now, Ken Goode, put simply, we see that Mr. Trump fired James Comey, the man overseeing the FBI investigation of Russian ties to his campaign. He met two Russian envoys in the Oval Office, including the Russian ambassador who got Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, into trouble, and of course, Mr. Flynn. And now we know about disclosures of classified intelligence to what we consider a foreign adversary, Russia, notwithstanding Mr. Trump's desire, and certainly on the face of it, certainly reasonable one to want to have better ties with Russia. But nonetheless, we're not there yet. So your take on all these weeks' events?
Well, this is certainly an administration and a president that really tried to thrive on crisis or thrive on a bit of chaos during the campaign. It was really a core part of his message to shake up Washington. What I think we've seen over the course of the last couple of weeks, however, is we've moved from chaos to constant crisis to what looks now as if we could be in a downward spiral that not only imperils an agenda, not only imperils what President Trump and his allies in Congress want to pass legislatively, but may actually even imperil the presidency itself. Any one of the half a dozen issues that have emerged over the course of the last 10 days or 2 weeks could be enough in a normal administration to knock them off course for weeks or months at a time. Taken all together, it certainly calls into question their ability to get back on track. And when we look at the specifics of some of them, particularly what we have learned over the last several days about what transpired in the meeting between President Trump and the senior Russian diplomats, where it has been reported and at least partially confirmed by the White House that the president did give the Russians intelligence information. And we know, or at least we've learned, that it came from Israel and it was a very highly placed intelligence asset providing deep information about ISIS. You know, that of itself is a serious crisis. But when you add to that the firestorm that has surrounded the firing of the FBI director and what we learned in recent days about whether or not Trump actually asked him to shut down an investigation, that brings up the specter of obstruction of justice. That episode really recalls some of our past experiences with misconduct from the White House, particularly in the Nixon administration, and we all know how that story ends.
All right. Well, back to you, John Fortier. Let's take sort of each crisis one at a time. Let's talk about the intelligence breach, or what was perceived as an intelligence breach, when Mr. Trump conveyed classified intelligence to Russian officials in the White House. Now, he claims he is allowed to do that, so that's not really illegal. But even if he is allowed to do what he did, John Fortier, what about the impact on our ability to gain recruits for intelligence and on the intelligence community? And of course, our allies, like we know now it was Israel, very important ally, and others. Wouldn't that make such allies more reluctant to share sensitive intelligence with the United States after such an incident, because they were not informed, and presumably they are supposed to give permission for the White House to have divulged information first?
Well, it's interesting. I guess of all the things that we could have talked about, I might have actually started in the other directions. First, the firing of Director Comey, and most recently, the reporting that the president may have asked Director Comey whether he would continue the investigation of Michael Flynn. I think those are probably the two most serious things to look into. I'm not doubting that the intelligence is potentially serious, but I think we are still finding out about this. And the National Security Advisor has said he did not believe that there was anything out of the ordinary in what the president did. Legally, the president can essentially declassify anything he wants. It may or may not be a good idea. He may not have fully known where that came from. So I guess of all the problems he's having, I would focus on some of the other ones more than I would focus on this.
We will, John Fortier. I promise you, I'm going from least serious in your spectrum to more. But I'm doing that because, let me turn to you now, Ken Goode, you're a national security analyst, because we're looking at not just the impact on the president or the White House, but we're looking at, you know, the impact on our allies. So while it may not be as serious
with respect to the U.S. political landscape. What about the impact of what Mr. Trump did vis-a-vis the disclosure of this intelligence to a foreign adversary?
I think it only looks less serious because of what else is happening, not because it's not an incredibly serious breach. This may not implicate any legal violation, but what it really goes to the core is the judgment of the president and what is, I think, quite clearly a reckless and cavalier attitude that he takes to the security of the United States. And if it is, as the story that the National Security Advisor told, that the president was unaware of the sources and methods of this information, yet still chose to divulge it to an adversary, that calls into question his judgment in certain circumstances here. We're talking about at least what we believe to be now a very highly placed asset within ISIS that is providing real-time threat information about an ongoing ISIS plot. It is very likely that that asset is no longer able to provide that information either because he was extracted or because he's in real jeopardy. As a consequence of that, the United States and our allies may be at higher risk of attack from ISIS. We know that this is associated with the laptop ban. We know that U.S. officials were considering expanding that to all flights from Europe to the United States, to all of these types of portable devices. If we're getting to that level, we are talking about a very serious threat to the United States, which the president may have compromised our intelligence asset on. That is an incredibly serious problem. And whether or not it was illegal, it shows extremely poor judgment.
Turning back to you, John Forte, to talk about some of your more favorite topics. So which one do you want to start with? The firing of James Comey, where is that going? We know there are people being interviewed for the position, but again, it's all the politics surrounding that and how both Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill are responding.
I think everybody recognizes that there is counterintelligence investigation going on with respect to the Russian meddling in U.S. elections. And the president seems to have thought that firing the FBI director might not have been as controversial as it certainly has been, in part because, of course, James Comey was unpopular with Hillary Clinton and others who supported her for other reasons. That's obviously not the case, and it does raise the question of whether, you know, he was trying to get around or quash that investigation. So I think there's much more that's going to have to come out about this as to what the president was thinking. I mean, again, legally, he had the right to fire the FBI director. There's no question about that. But I do think there are some questions, and again, Democrats have been opposed to the president from the beginning, but that Republicans are asking questions about that now is a much more serious thing. Will they move at least in the direction of certainly wanting to hear from Director Comey and wanting to hear from other people? That, I think that's almost certainly going to happen. Will the investigations currently ongoing on the Hill step up? Yes, I think it will. So I think that's the context for all of the other things following from it. On the last one, if the director was asked, pushed very directly by the president to stop investigating Michael Flynn, and there's some reporting in that direction where we don't know all the details, you know, that would be a serious issue as well. And I'm sure we'll hear more from James Comey very soon.
Well, back to you, Ken Good, for your reaction on the firing of James Comey. And of course, the shifting rationale. First, we heard Mr. Trump say he used a memo by the deputy attorney general who wrote about his mishandling of the email server by Hillary Clinton. And that was the first reason Mr. Trump gave. But then quickly after that, he betrayed that rationale and said he wasn't happy about the Russia thing. Now, he made it very clear. So that does cause great concern because of the contradictions there and the fact that there is an ongoing investigation into the fact that the Russians did hack our election and did so in favor of Mr. Trump. And then now what about the ties between the campaigns? So your reaction to what some could see is biting the hand that feeds you, because in a way, Mr. Comey, by at the 11th hour, reopening the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email, some say, or at least Mrs. Clinton says, that she thinks that is what helped her lose the election.
Two tracks are exposed here by this episode. One is politics, another is legal jeopardy. The politics here is that this really goes to the core competency of the administration and being able to execute what it is that they want to do in the manner in which they want to do it. It is true that the president can fire the FBI director, but the manner in which they did it was sheer political malpractice in exposing their new deputy attorney general, who had a great deal of credibility, to ridicule for coming up with this, what was even transparently true at the time, just a ridiculous rationale for firing Comey, and then to have the president himself, after 2 days of his administration relying on that rationale, completely undercut it. I think that calls into question whether or not they can execute the kinds of things that they want to do and the policies and the decisions that they make. From the legal side, again, it is within the president's authority to fire the FBI director, but why he did it matters. And what Trump has said about why he did it, because he was upset about the Russia investigation, then implicates other activities that the president has done that could fit the pattern of behavior that shows that he was intending to obstruct this investigation. We don't know that that's true, but it certainly does bring a new light on some of the things that the president has done. He's reportedly asked Comey for his personal loyalty. Comey refused to give it. He reportedly asked Comey to shut down the investigation of Michael Flynn. That didn't happen. He then fired James Comey because of the Russia investigation. He attempted to suggest that James Comey shouldn't testify because the president had recorded their conversations and those recordings could contradict what Comey would say publicly. This kind of pattern of behavior really calls into question the motives that the president has and the intent of his actions in this area. And we will certainly learn a lot more about this when James Comey testifies before Congress, when potentially we see some of the memos that he wrote memorializing his conversations with the president. And then the focus will shift to the Congress and what they intend to do about it.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier, he's political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Ken Good, from whom you just heard. He's senior fellow with the National Security Team at the Center for American Progress. And we are discussing the latest issues dominating the U.S. political landscape. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel, VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Ibrahim Abba. He's from Kaduna State, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier, to talk a little bit more about the politics of all that's going on and poll numbers with respect to Mr. Trump. As you said earlier, he still does have a base that seems to be with him. And many actually do like what Ken Good referred to, the sort of pattern of behavior that's very disruptive. They see this embrace of controversy as a sign of shaking up Washington. But talk about Mr. Trump's poll numbers, where they stand right now, and actually define who the base is.
Well, Donald Trump came into office with low job approval ratings, lower than recent presidents. You could have reasonably argued that he came in with his base and with a base against him very strongly. He was about at 45% for first bit of his presidency. He did suffer a dip when he started really to get into the health care debate, and it wasn't going that well in the House at first, but seemed to be recovering from that. If you remember a few weeks ago, actually, he seemed to be kind of coming back and doing well. But the numbers have really tailed off since the Comey firing from what was 45% to a little below 40 now. Are they still going down? Could there be more? Certainly there could be more. So there's definitely been some significant erosion of poll numbers at this point. President Bush at one point was down in almost the 30% range. It, you know, could potentially go lower than that. But I think we're still at a wait and see time where many Republicans think, probably rightly to some extent, that there have been plenty of people against Donald Trump from the beginning, that there's been media against Donald Trump, and they're not ready to give up on him at this point. So we'll have to see. But it has not been good for the president. And while he had dropped a little bit after the healthcare debate and came back, here we're wondering whether it's something that's just a more permanent downturn or not.
Turning to you, Ken Good, how do you interpret Mr. Trump's poll numbers hovering around this, you know, late 30s, 40%? How do you interpret the base, so to speak? Should we make a distinction between the actual base, some of the hardcore Trump supporters who really believed in him and in his wanting to shake up Washington and so on, and those Republicans or independents who voted for him as a protest vote against Mrs. Clinton?
The makeup of the Republican electorate right now is really two contradictory groups. The strongest supporters of President Trump actually came to him in many ways because he rejected a lot of the establishment Republican and conservative orthodox policies of the past two decades. And now when you pair that with the rest of the Republicans who are sticking with him in large measure because they think he can help them deliver on their agenda to cut taxes, to repeal Obamacare, to make other regulatory changes. Those two groups now are in some tension because it's going to be hard for me to see how this administration is able to put together the kind of series of accomplishments that they can take to their voters and say, we delivered on what it was that we promised you. Yes, it is true that Republican voters are largely sticking with Trump and sticking with the administration and Republicans in general. But how long can they go if there's nothing to show for it? It is unusual at this point in a presidency to really have so few accomplishments. So when we compare this administration to the past ones, yes, they still have strong numbers among their voters, but they have very little to show for it. And when you add in all of this controversy, it's really hard to see how this administration can work with Congress to actually deliver on the things that can give them a road back. And this constant state of crisis with one story after another, one controversy after another coming and coming, it's impossible for me to see a way through to deliver on an agenda. And that's what they need to do to come back. And that's why I think they're in real trouble.
Back to you, John Fortier. What about delivering on this legislative agenda at this point? We're seeing Republican-controlled Congress clearly frustrated. We see House of Representatives Speaker Paul Ryan rather frustrated because he would like to move forward on health care. We know the health care bill was passed by the House, but it's going to be sitting and probably languishing in the Senate for a while. They've got a few other priorities on their plate. And then what about tax reform? What is the future? How do you see this going forward?
Well, I agree in part with Ken, but partly not. I think at this point in administration, we're still really quite early. We would have to see what would have happened, for example, on health care, or what would happen with the House passing it. Yes, there's going to be a lot of legislative negotiation. It took Barack Obama until almost a year to get health care passed. So I do think the timelines are a little longer on this than we sometimes expect. The first 6-8 months are important, the first year, even till next year into March before the election campaign really starts to begin. So I think the Republicans had plenty of time, but I do think this is very serious and could derail that. And so if there's some way which the president and the Republicans can get past this by changes of personnel, changes of the subject, some investigations going on parallel tracks on legislation, that would be the best scenario. But I think it is calling into question a very important time where they need all the time they can get to keep working on this agenda. And come next March, you got what you got. You're not going to change much before coming into the election. And this is a key time with some time left if things were going better.
Well, speaking of the election, back to you, Ken Gu, to talk about the impact all this may have on the 2018 congressional elections here in the United States. We have these elections every 2 years for members of Congress, and I think we see some Democrats salivating.
Certainly, Democrats are feeling as if they're in a much stronger position than you would expect to be just 4 months into an administration in which you're shut out of power everywhere. Looking towards the midterms in 2018 with real potential, and that there's a lot more opportunity than perhaps we thought there would be going forward. We don't also have to wait till 2018 because we have a couple of very competitive special elections coming up, one next week in Montana and one in June in Georgia. That could really shake up things here in Washington because those are seats that Republicans should win. They're very comfortable Republican majority districts. And it looks as if the Democratic challengers are running very good races and could very well win one or both. Now, special elections are always unusual, but you wouldn't really expect Democrats to be competitive in these races. So if those change, then we're looking at a much different run-up to the midterm elections.
Given all the controversies, John Fortier, and the stalling on the legislative agenda, do you think Republicans are a bit worried as we run up to the preparation for 2018 elections? Are you hearing some worry about potentially losing some seats?
Yeah, I would focus, like Ken did, on these two special elections coming up, because I think those are not only important down the road, but they're important for Republicans' calculations of how they're going to react to all these sets of investigations now. If members of the House and Senate feel as if the tide is turning, I would say especially that Montana race is one that Republicans should win in a normal year. If that's turning against them, they may be looking out for their own interest and say, look, we do need to do some more serious investigation.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier, political scientist and Director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Ken Goode, Senior Fellow with the National Security Team at the Center for American Progress. Gentlemen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Cornelius Tenner. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.